His glory, His divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Size Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Om Shri Sai Ram. With love and gratitude, I bow to the lotus feet of my God and the love of my life, Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. And I also bow to Him in each one of you, our dear listeners. For all of us at Team Radio Sai, we connect with Swami through each one of you. For us, listener is our God, or should I say, listener Devo Bhava. Good morning, this is your host Karuna, and I thank you for joining me on this episode of Morning Glory on the 4th of May 2017. Since I am away from the office this morning, I have pre-recorded this episode for your inspiration and listening pleasure. Today you can enjoy the conclusion of the 6-part Radio Sai exclusive series, Reflection and Reverie with Mr. V. Srinivasan. This will be followed by a brand new episode of Trisvit Divinity with the Sai youth from America, Mr. Adhirath Bola Pragada. And of course your favorite Pada Mandiram Aarti at the conclusion. Please enjoy the show and do remember to send us your feedback by email at listener@radiosai.org. And I pray to Swami to bless us all with the Sai Sam Thursday ahead. Jai Sai Ram. Sir, what I would like to hear from you are your thoughts about the focus and priorities for the Satya Sai mission in a changing world.
I think, Karuna, you're aware that the world in the second decade of the 21st century is totally different from the one which was in the second half of the 20th century. It is a globally interconnected one with great emphasis on material success at all levels of society. Inequality is increasing everywhere, along with wars and conflicts. Value systems of past generations, handed down from age to age, are rapidly eroding. Ecology degradation and environmental change are threatening climates in all countries with more natural occurrences. In such an environment, belief in divinity is not at the center of human existence, unfortunately, today. Even where it is present, it is more of a panacea for facing problems and difficulties. You see, so
like a
many
quick fix.
People still go to a lot of temples, yes. But why do they go?
And astrologers and that kind of solutions.
You see, huge crowds at temples, but most of them do not go there just
to pray.
But to ask the Lord for something which they need in their day-to-day lives. So this has been a sort of used as a panacea.
Wish fulfillment.
Actually, that's right. So now we also see that religious conflicts are exploding everywhere, and the spirit of tolerance and accommodation is denuded.
Actually, we are regressing on that area.
Absolutely. We remember how all religious communities lived at peace with each other in India. We know in the past ages how they lived in the Palestine. Muslims, Christians, Coptics, all lived with absolute peace in the former Baltic areas. You saw how what was one country today has split up into so many countries, each of which is at the throat of the other.
And Europe has seen such seismic shifts in religious intolerance.
And which is increasing.
Yes.
Spirituality as an essential part of life at all stages is not fashionable at present. It is supposed to be the crutch of the evening years of one's life. Oh, the young and the middle-aged say, oh, there's time for that. I have to be involved in the world. It needs my attention 24/7. I'll think about all this when I'm older. Techniques for spiritual sadhana are now repackaged and offered as a means of improving one's physical and sensory condition. You're asked to meditate to improve your mental status, your intellectual capacity, your capability to do your job better, your response to challenging situations. Meditation is offered as a solution and as a tool to improve your performance in these situations.
And although meditation does have those positive side effects, that is not the purpose for
exactly.
which...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what are the peripheral areas of meditation are being propagated as the main areas. The new devotees now coming to Bhagwan and those joining the Sai organization now are persons who have not had the physical darshan of Bhagwan and experienced his charisma and his love.
The three things that he said, darshan, sparshan and sambhashan, they will not have the opportunity.
Yes.
So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and that's what I was about to address. Yet they are attracted. You see, we have increasing crowds at Prashanti Nilayam. So these people are attracted by the experiences of their elders and the reports of the work being done by the Sai organization. See, it is an interesting fact that young people in many sectors are interested to help others. You know, it is there which we see, for example, we saw that during the Chennai floods, we saw it during the cyclone, that people reached out to others and helped them. And this was something we greatly valued, that this spirit of help is not yet gone. You see this in the Western countries also. Those who have what we feel are value degraded societies, you see young people there also still wanting to work in other countries.
And volunteerism is very popular.
Yes, and today volunteerism is very much recognized and encouraged. But when they come to Prashanti Nilayam, such people, they are overawed by the samadhi of Bhagwan and all that he has manifested. You know, they see the hospital, they see the Sai Kulwanthal, the enormous place, they see the university. So they are very much impressed by what Bhagwan has achieved. However, they have to come to terms with a formless God, unlike what they are used to in temples or even in Shirdi. When you go to Shirdi, the Samadhi Darshan, where there's a statue of Bhagwan, is the prime place. Yes, people do go to Dwarka Mai, people do go to Gurustan.
Gurustan.
So all these, they go there, but the main focus is the Shirdi Samadhi Mandir and the Samadhi Darshan and the Abhishek to the idol of Shirdi Sai. And, you know, one has to appreciate that this is not easy for everyone to come to terms with a formless God. And they are not able to envision Bhagwan easily in their hearts, never having seen him before. They only see his picture. But that's not the same as having seen Bhagwan in the flesh. That impression which resides in our heart, that these new devotees will not have today. So, we also have to look at that with all the emphasis on Nirakara Rupam and Advaita, Hinduism and most other religions provide a visual form for the devotees to relate to. At Prashanti Nilayam, they have to relate to the photos of Bhagwan. in the psyche of the Orientals, they find it much easier to relate to a representation of their god in the form of a statue.
So you are open to the idea of a statue of Bhagavan?
It's not open. I think that we should do it.
Oh.
This is therefore an important decision for the trust to take with regard to providing a physical statue of Bhagavan and a place of such worship somewhere in the environs of the ashram. It is my feeling that such a step will explode the number of devotees who come to Prashanthi Nilayam, particularly new devotees, and also crimp the style of the counterfeit Babas. Already temples for Swami have come up in several places, attracting devotees. And one cannot rule out the possibility of somebody setting up a temple of Bhagavan on the main road from Bangalore to Puttaparthi.
Mm. And just diverting the crowds there.
So this will be a stopover on the way to Puttaparthi.
Mm.
So if we don't do it, somebody else is going to do it. You can't prevent it.
Mm.
And we'll be regretting it later. So this is one aspect which today I'm taking a slightly different viewpoint to what has been the official line for a long time on this. I'm not saying that we should put the statue right in the Sai Kulwant Hall. Said somewhere in the environments of Prashanthi Nilayam, we should provide such an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
It is for those who are wiser and who should be in the deciding position to take that decision.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is a landmark birthday coming up in 3 years' time, of course.
Yes. The 100th birthday, so the 95th birthday, 95th, yes. And
first.
Also you have the centenary not too far away.
Yes.
And I speak in what I believe. May not be right, but I have more time for reflection now.
For sure.
What I believe in, you ask me what are my thoughts.
Yes.
And so these are my thoughts. So that's one thought. The second thought is pertaining to the Sai organization, and which I know better due to my intimate involvement with it for over 16 years. The three wings of the organization are the educational, the spiritual and the service. Bhagwan had always highlighted this importance of spiritual underpinnings to all our activities. The older members had imbibed this culture directly from him. As newer members enter the organization, they are more interested in the service activities than in the spiritual activities.
Mm.
You find youngsters who are very interested to be involved in the seva activities.
Mm. Action-oriented.
But they are not so interested in the bhajans or the study circles.
Mm.
The exception are those who come from our Balvikas. They come as well-rounded individuals and are excellent raw material for our Sai organization. The Sai organization now is spreading to many places and actively seeking younger persons with various skills. We are looking for such people. Unfortunately, while many youngsters desire to serve social causes, their attitude to the Sai organization is similar to that towards an NGO.
So
many NGOs are working in our country and doing good work, serving the poor and the needy. But Bhagwan had always postulated that the service we do is not important, but is a means for our spiritual improvement. He had also stated that without a spiritual base, there will be no sustained motivation to do service. You may do it for a month, you may do it for 3 months, and then you'll drop off. It is the spiritual background which gives you the constant motivation for involving yourself in service. It was my understanding that is spirituality and seva are like the two legs of a human being. One cannot walk on one leg alone. You have to have both the legs. If you are spiritual, you have motivation to do seva. The more seva that you do increases your spirituality. This was Bhagwan's fundamental emphasis, and also he said that service done without selfless love is not service. If you were to stand on a road corner and you see an old lady standing to cross the busy traffic, and youngster says, takes hold of her hand and helps her to cross, but in the left hand talking on the cell phone on totally different matters and reaching her across the road with no great involvement, we think he has done a good deed, he's got brownie points. But according to my understanding of Bhagwan's teachings, that is not seva. Such action should require his total involvement in that action itself, with love towards the individual and concern for that person and interaction before and after the action is completed. Not that you have to sit, stand and have a big dialogue with her, but a smile, a respectful salutation is what makes the difference. Not this physical action of just doing something which goes along as a multitasking which you are doing, of talking on your cell phone to your office or something like that. So this was what Bhagwan had said, that service without love is not service. While the organization is in spreading, it is found that in several places, people have become more preoccupied with the act of service, planning, execution, statistics, losing the spiritual emphasis.
You think so?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
See, because just as you, when you use your intellect alone to do service.
But don't we live in an age where we have to quantify, grab the statistics, have the data flowing in, so that is also required?
That is required, but it should not be the end all and serve all.
Mm.
What is required is the involvement of your prema, involvement of your spiritual underpinning. Without that, if you are doing this just, you would, for example, do the same thing in your office, how to execute a project.
But can't those efficiencies be applicable to a spiritual organization?
They should, they can.
Hmm.
But they should not be in isolation.
Yeah, but because we have to produce these so many annual reports, for example, these statistics are necessary, but that doesn't mean that the prema is lost, the love is gone.
But if you are totally involved, only the preparation of the statistics, for the sake of preparation of the statistics, oh, my boss wants to, this district president wants this report, the All India president wants this report, and you do it in a totally mechanical fashion, you are not fully concerned with the correctness of the report, you are asking somebody to put something together so that people will keep quiet, that is not the real sort of a report which should be prepared in the SAI organization. We should understand that, yes, preparation of the statistics is important. It is part of our spiritual exercise. And it should be done in the same way as we would do our prayer on that. So definitely, all the planning, all the logic which we apply is essential. It is necessary. But you should not get so much preoccupied only with that, without paying any attention to others. See, today I just give you a small example. A few months back we went and cleaned this station here, right next to Sundaram. It's the Greenways Road station.
Bus stand?
No.
Railway station?
Metro station.
Metro station, okay.
Not metro, it's MRTS, sorry.
Okay.
There's a mass transit scheme. So it was absolutely in a filthy condition. Now, what's the difference between how an NGO would do it and how the SAI organization did it? The NGO would look at it as what exists in the problems which face and attend to them. They may be smoking a cigarette. They may be indulging in gossip while they do that action, planning the next chill out party, talking ill about somebody while it is being done. Physical action is there. The station is getting cleaned. But the way the SAI organization did it, because I was present, is where they did it singing bhajans, thinking of God, and dedicating that action to Bhagwan rather than doing it for the sake of doing it. Sometimes, even in our SAI organization, we lose that focus. and get more involved in that planning and execution of the action
than this preconceived outcome.
Exactly. So what we must never forget, that we must understand that we are offering this to Bhagwan. We are not serving the individuals, but we are serving divinity. Bhagwan always said, be grateful to the person you are serving. Do you ever think that it is possible for the NGO to lay down its protocol? Be grateful to the people you are serving?
No, the protocol will say, make sure there is a photo opportunity.
Exactly.
And you capture everything.
While we say, be grateful to the person whom you serve.
Well, it's a totally different point of view.
And this should never be lost sight of. We have to see the same divinity in all. And this was the real mission of the Sai Avatar. So I am hoping that the Sai organization throughout the world will certainly correct course if this has happened. I am not saying it has happened everywhere. But I know it has happened in some places, even in India. And take steps to correct the course. Course correction is necessary. Reorientation is necessary. Rededication is necessary in order to make sure that we don't place too much importance on numbers. Because Bhagwan always said, numbers are, quantity is not important, quality is important. So this is another area I feel is something for the organization and the trust to focus on.
What do you think of the fact that, you know, we have such a dynamic and vibrant seva organization in India, and then there's one all over the world in 121 countries. Can the twain meet, because there is, we operate under the auspices of the international organization and then the India-wide organization?
In fact, one of the points I wanted to mention here, that there has to be much more integration between the overseas and the India wings in many, many spheres. Everything cannot be done in the same manner, but lot of it should be done in a common fashion. And what the point you have made is very valid, that there has to be a greater commonality between the functioning of the India organization and the overseas organization. I have one more thought. I would like to see the Sati Sai organization in India as more of a pan-India institution, rather than just seen as mainly a southern.
And what can we do about that?
Yeah, that's what we talked earlier in the morning today, that the Hindi output from your own radio size is not adequate at all. This is one thing we have to attack. Because one cannot forget that the entire north, whether you are from Gujarat,
or Rajasthan, or
forget Rajasthan, from Gujarat, where they speak Gujarati, all of them know Hindi. You go right across to northeast, Hindi is understood. You go and speak Telugu or Tamil there, nobody understands.
Right.
You try to speak English in the deserts of Rajasthan, they don't understand. So really, that is part of the total picture that we have to envision of making the Sai organization as a pan-India institution. We should create greater awareness of Bhagwan. I remember many years back, I went to a village somewhere in North India and I asked him in Hindi, aap Sai Baba ko jante ho? Haan, zarur janta ho. Aapke man mein wo kya hai? Kya irada hai aapka? So he said, haan, wo to bade sadhu hai.
So in response to your question, who is Sai Baba? The person said he is a great saint.
Right. So then I realized that how much we had failed. Like I just spoke earlier, that these misguided devotees have reduced the avatar to a sadhu or a pujari,
which is essentially a saint or a priest.
Right. So we in the mission have failed to create awareness of Bhagwan in many parts of the country as to what he really is. Of course, many people say, oh, Swami doesn't need you to teach people. But that is a simplistic answer. We have to do our awareness, not to say, oh, Baba's Bhagwan, Baba's Bhagwan. Create awareness of all that he has done. What his teachings are. You go into so many areas where there are caste-driven habitations. and create the awareness that Bhagavan believed in one caste, one religion, one community, and see what the impact would be. Whether you have seen that being spoken about by most of the so-called religious leaders today, who are stressing caste and division of society on caste religions rather than unity. So this is where I feel that definitely the Sai organization has to do much more to create a pan-India image for Bhagwan rather than to be seen only as one which is based in South India on there. You wanted to ask me something?
Yes. Speaking of Prashanti Nilayam, you know, you were speaking about once, you know, if we have, for example, an image of Bhagwan in the ashram, the numbers will explode. All that aside, what are your thoughts about making Prashanti Nilayam, the ashram, more inviting and welcoming for devotees?
Well, I have several thoughts on that. We have to greatly improve the facilities for devotees within the ashram. I think today's devotees are not like the devotees of yore, of olden days, who would put up with anything just to have Swami's darshan.
And, you know, joyfully sleep under a tree and go to Chitravati for a bath.
No toilets, then they would come and stay for months. Today's devotees are expectant of certain minimum facilities, and it is our duty to provide that. I think the trust is taking some steps, but we have to accelerate and improve in some respects the substandard logistics. All interaction between ashram personnel and devotees should be loving and helpful. The word prashanti implies that. Prashanti, supreme peace, supreme love. So that means that those who live and have any responsibility and authority within Prashanti Nilayam have to have that spirit of love and patience. Patience to put up with eccentric visitors. Patience to respond to inquiries.
And perhaps repeated inquiries about the same topic.
If you remember the words which Shirdi Baba said, Shraddha and Saburi. What does the word Saburi imply? It means many things. Perseverance, patience. These are essential if you want to make Prashanti Nilayam a more visitor-friendly place than before. I think that the trend of where we have started to use technology has to be accelerated. We should have on-screen booking of accommodation that has been done. We should provide more opportunities for online registration for people who want to do seva. If somebody wants to participate like they do in a langar, we should give them an opportunity.
Like a community kitchen in a gurdwara or a Sikh temple.
Right. And to know that if they come, they would definitely be allowed to participate. So this trend of technology, there are many things and we need people to apply themselves. And I have one further thought. I think in keeping with a holistic image of the trust of our organization, we have to increase the involvement of dedicated and qualified women at all levels.
Is that something you say in hindsight or does the trust feel the need for it?
Well, today whatever I say is in hindsight. So, you can draw your own conclusions on that.
Because women are so conspicuous by their absence.
Few years back, I took a step to break the glass ceiling to appoint a trustee in the Sai Trust of Madhya Pradesh. That was Meenatai Pimplapure. She's so competent, very qualified, and she's doing a great job with the Bhopal College. And she shows a lot of initiative, and she's not a pushover. She's quite firm. She's very considerate, very polite, but she's firm. And you can't just pull the wool over her eyes. So the time has come to look at possibility of
equal opportunity for women. You said for the image of the trust, what about its improved functionality? Because women will bring in a perspective to represent more than half of the Sai devotee population. Our Balvikas is led by women. The Balvikas movement, which is the base of the Sai spiritual education. I think definitely we have more women gurus than men. In Seva, they are half by half.
So instead of looking at only the numbers, I would look at what it implies. It implies a recognition that women are second not to men in their devotion. There are women who are competent, qualified, and there are women who have much to contribute to improving the efficiency of our trusts, of our organization. So, whether they are 50% or 49% or 51%, I'm looking more at the principle that women will bring a new perspective and a wider experience to the functioning of the organization, the state trusts, and even the central trusts. So, whether it is in hindsight or foresight, I feel that this is something that should be considered.
And we hope your fellow trustees also share your thought on that. So when you look back, such a long journey, such deep involvement in so many SAI projects, do you feel you could have done anything differently today in hindsight?
I think the very principle, the very concept of hindsight is that you have a better and a different view on matters than what you had earlier. And definitely there are things that I would have done differently. Whether I would have been able to do it or not is another question. And hindsight is a luxury which is given to man. But in my opinion, that one does become wiser when one steps aside from being directly involved. But how do you use that hindsight? You should not be fissiparous and use it for criticism, because then it's a question of sour grapes. It is one where you even admit your own shortcomings, but be bold enough to talk openly about what you feel is a suggested course correction. And that is what I believe I'm doing today. When I say some things, and it would be very easy for people to ask me, why didn't you do this when you were in the position? It's not easy to answer that. Perhaps as All India President, if I don't see there's much. The only thing is that where I have not been successful enough in creating a pan-India image. Otherwise, I have no regrets on my tenure as All India President. In the trust, we were 9 trustees. And that, you know, every decision is taken by consensus. You are not like other trustees.
No quorum. There's no
question of majority or minority.
It has to be unanimous.
Always in Swami's trust, we had laid down the principle that I have to adjust to somebody else's point of view. He has to adjust to a third person's point of view. And we evolve a consensus. This necessarily slows down decision making. But in many cases, those decisions turn out to be right, rather than what appears to be the obvious way to move forward at a particular time. This is not an excuse for inaction, but the rationale of how the Central Trust works, the trustees work, is what I have expressed just now. The thoughts which I am now stating, which may be different from what was done before, is again for the consideration of the trustees, those who have been there and some of the newer trustees, together evolve a consensus. And I don't believe that Swami's trust will ever have a situation where there is a vote taken on any particular project. That is going against the spirit of what Bhagwan always wanted us to function. You are true to your duty, you are entirely objective and you are not subjective. You see that this is your view of what is good for the institution, rather than it is something which is suitable to your individual point of view. So that is the basic code of any trustee of the Swami's organizations, that they have to be true to the and keep the faith to Swami in functioning in a totally objective manner and not in a subjective manner. So these thoughts are, as you said, my thoughts. And I say it again.
Yeah.
It's my thoughts. It is up for consideration by my brothers, my sisters.
Hopefully some sisters
hopefully
also.
Sisters too. And for them to pray to Bhagwan for guidance. And this is one aspect that I would like to highlight, that I believe Bhagwan is, and I feel it now much more than before. Though I did used to speak these words, I feel it much more now that Swami is with us, in us, around us. That He is willing to continue to guide us at all times, responsible at all times. And while in the past I did not trouble Swami personally with many decisions that I had to make, today I have started to do that I pray to Him and make out chits of various options and place it before His picture. And every time I have found, He gives the most appropriate answer on that.
Appropriate means what you wanted to hear or...
No, what I believe is to be right.
But if you already knew it's right, why did you have to pick a chit,
no,
sir?
Certainly not. Uh-huh. Even if I believe there's a course of action, I believe it is right. I don't know whether Swami will agree with that course of action.
Uh-huh.
In the past, I never did anything without asking Swami, even though I believed right. And many things He did not agree with what I had said.
I see.
Now, even if I feel that this is the way to go, I would like to put it before Bhagwan and take His direction. And I found on reflection that I believe this was the most correct decision.
What the chit gave you.
What the chit gave on that. So, what we have, Swami has, I don't know whether He told it directly, but I know many of the elders in the old days used to say, that whenever you have a question to Swami and if you are not able to reach Him, pray before Him and place the chits before Him and pick it out at random or have a child pick it up. I have done this on several occasions and I am very satisfied with the response, even though one was against what I wanted to do. So I don't ask any further questions. Why is Swami saying like this? I said, Swami's direction, finish. That is what it is. And maybe it sounds a bit, I won't use the word foolish, but not very objective and
rational.
But I believe that this is what Sai devotees must learn to do if they have faith in Bhagwan and want to relate better with Him in a meaningful way. So that you don't feel His absence on that. And you feel, in fact, His presence. And now, after the Mahasamadhi, over these years, and particularly as I have started stepping back from the direct involvement in so many things which kept me so busy, I have greater and greater faith in such matters on that. And I feel Bhagwan's presence constantly and guiding me in the way my life moves forward in the evening years of my life. So this is my thought, my belief, and I'm sharing it with you.
And I'm very glad you are. My final question to you is, you know, now that you have the ability to step back and look more objectively at what has happened, looking forward, in an ideal situation, what is your vision for the Satya Sai mission for taking humanity across whatever we are facing right now? All the issues you raised, whether it's poverty, terrorism, global warming, environmental issues and whatnot. What is the role that you would like ideally to see Sai mission play or position itself where?
I think in my strong belief, the only solution for today's problems of the world are by following the teachings of Bhagwan Satya Sai Baba.
But are they not very similar to that of other masters?
Yes, but Bhagwan never said anything new.
That's right.
He never said anything which was unknown before. But the way He put it across was something which impressed on your heart immediately. It was not like sitting and reading the Rig Veda or the Yajur Veda. But this was the essence of those Upanishads, which He put it in a way that every single human being who heard could not escape being impacted by them. So whether it was the question of turn your cheek, yes, Jesus said that. But the way Swami says that love is supreme, love not only your friend but love your enemy. See, today if you look at what is happening in the world, it is because we do not want to love our enemies. You don't even want to love your own people. So this is what I would say, that people are beginning to realize this. But the history of the world is such that it will take some time before this realization percolates everywhere on them. So the vision I have is a world which is not that I say that all should become devotees of Sathya Sai Baba.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to be good, plenty of good Christians, Muslims, Jews, Buddhists, Jains, Shintos, Hindus, but to all accept what Bhagwan's teachings are, that these are the solutions to save mankind from catastrophe, to realize that one has to put limitations on one's wants. Today it's common sense. Everybody wants a better standard of living, and all political parties in every country want to provide that. Is that sustainable? That today in India, a very, very small percentage have a standard of living which is higher than what exists in United States or Switzerland. And if everybody wants that, if everybody's desires are going to go up, can the finite resources of the world match those expectations? Everybody knows the answer, but nobody has the courage to speak out that you have to compromise your standards of living. You cannot expect to have more all the time. You cannot expect to have greater and greater material articles, material benefits. You have to share. You have to care. You cannot say that I should progress, the rest of the world be damned. That is a short-term distortion, and it will get the fate which it deserves. There is no answer to that. But it will again contribute to human misery. But we have to go through these
cycles
before we accept. But my vision, and I feel that it will be achieved, whether we call it Ram Rajya or Sai Rajya, I think the world will begin to notice that what Sathya Sai Baba has spoken in the 20th and early 21st century is the answer to the problems which face mankind, not only face the world as such. The word I use, mankind, is because man now feels that if the earth is not enough, he can move to other planets. He will create the same problems there also.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the problems faced by mankind are what is important, not just the problems which are faced by the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, Karuna, we have had a... You have anything more?
Your final thoughts.
Well, I pray to Bhagwan. My final thoughts is always a prayer. And we have him in this beautiful picture by our side. I pray to him to bless and guide all the office bearers and the members of the Sai institutions, as well as Sai devotees, to guide them to realize the truth and practice of all his teachings. Jai Sai Ram.
Jai Sai Ram, sir. On that prayerful note, I thank you very much, Mr. V. Srinivasan, and I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank Mr. Meenakshi Sundaram and Brother Sri Sai Nath from the Radio Sai Studios of Sundaram in Chennai, where we are able to record this wonderfully insightful conversation with you.
Marathon session.
Yes, indeed.
So this is the Chennai Marathon.
Yes, the new Chennai Marathon at the Radio Sai Studios in Sundaram. Thank you.
Thank you, Karuna, for taking the trouble to come all the way here.
My pleasure and my honor, sir.
I hope your listeners would find this to be of some interest and helpful.
For sure.
May Bhagwan bless them all.
Thank you.
And if I have hurt anybody, I pray to Bhagwan to motivate them to forgive me. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, sir.
सुन लो दिल की पुकार सुन लो
हमारे जान हो
to Sight.
Spend the day with Sight. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to Tryst with Divinity. Today we have a young adult, Adhirath, from Boston, USA, visiting us at Radio Sai, and we thought it's a good opportunity to catch up with Adhirath and see what place Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba occupies in his young teenage life. So with that, I welcome you, Adhirath, to Radio Sai.
Sairam, thank you for having me today.
It's good to have you. It's very nice to hear from young people and young voices and to know that to learn from them what Swami means to them. Yeah. So I understand you were only 4 years old when Bhagwan came into your life.
Yeah, that's when I was first introduced. My introduction to Swami was always with music. The bhajan singing really attracted me to Swami. I remember my parents telling me, I wouldn't fall asleep to any other song. If you put Govinda Krishna Jay, Swami would sing, or any other bhajan that Swami would sing, I would immediately calm down and fall asleep. So that was my introduction to Swami with music. And since then, as I grew into my 8-9 years, SSC, that's when I was introduced to SSC when I moved to Boston from Canada. And with SSC, everything was very new to me because I thought, oh, music is everything. That's what Swami likes. And that's the only thing that I should do. And then I came to SSC and I was like, there's so much more to learn from Swami. There's so much SSC values, the five human values. And SSC was also another way for me to connect to Swami. Growing up with my kid, like with my friends, it was very nice to learn Swami's values with my friends, and that was something else.
I see. And for the sake of our listeners who may not be familiar, SSE stands for Sai Spiritual Education, and these are weekend classes that teach children how to integrate the five human values of truth, peace, love, right conduct, and nonviolence into their everyday life.
Yeah.
And most Sai centers conduct these classes. So, you know, growing up in America, in the Boston area, as a person of Indian origin, what impact did SSE have upon your life? I'm sure at school there's different set of challenges, whether it's your academic goals or peer pressure, mm-hmm. or dealing with bullying sometimes and many other issues that young people go through. The stress of studies, the stress of to perform and deliver, mm-hmm. and then also to meet the expectations not only of your parents and teachers but also your peers.
Yeah.
What role did SSE play?
Well, SSC, the first thing that it taught out of everything is that not only do you have your parents that you can go to for help, but you have such a large Sai community. Everywhere you go, that you're truly involved into this, accepted into this giant family. So SSC slowly, you know, from the younger age, would teach you these values, telling these stories. And as you would grow up, SSC would transition into this, how do we apply this? Because it's very hard in a day-to-day basis meeting so many different people with such different personalities. How do we control ourselves and integrate these SSC values, integrate all these five human values? So in my own experience, SSC was something like, SSC basically was how to be the right person and how to control our sense, control our mind. Personally, for me, I maintained myself in a very agitated state. I always jumped to conclusions a lot. And what SSC taught me was the person can say what they want to say, or a certain result can happen, like in a test, you will get a certain grade. But it's important to calm yourself down. Because if SSC said, if you calm yourself down, you think about why did this happen? I wanted to get a good grade on this test, but no, I got a slightly lower grade. Is there a reason why? Maybe so that I don't feel better about myself and I say, hey, to one of my friends, I got a better grade than you, because that would bring out the ego within us. So SSC taught us that with the community that we have around us, we can go to anyone, we can talk to them, we can get advice from them and live in such a loving community while also developing our own confidence, developing our own patience to deal with these day-to-day issues and activities.
I see. And was it easy? Would you say you succeeded?
there were times when I felt like I succeeded, but there were also times where I was like, how is SSC helping me in these situations? Because not only did I have Indian friends, I also had American friends and Western friends, and they had a completely different mindset on communication or values and ethics and all. So in talking to them, bringing up SSC or using these values, it was kind of hard sometimes because the way that they would respond, the way that they would react to my comments, to my actions, were very much different than if I were with any Sai family or Sai friend. It was hard at times because you would feel like, I learned all these values and these values are supposed to help me. These values are supposed to take me through and make the other person better, make me better, and we all grow together. But at times it was like it was only a one-way street where I was waiting for a response from the other person. I was waiting for a result from the other end, and I would never receive it. So I always thought, okay, so I learned all these values, but why isn't the result showing up? I learned after many times becoming very agitated and very, why isn't this happening? Why, when I really want something and I'm working towards it, that Swami doesn't allow for it to happen. It's not that Swami doesn't allow for it to happen. It's more so that he has something better in mind. And I cannot question that. But SSC taught me to stay calm, stay quiet. So if someone says something, if my friend says something or criticizes me or even praises me, keep a calm mind. Don't let it get to your head. And keep a smile on your face and react and answer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you sound quite mature. So were there times when you felt left behind or someone made you feel less than equal?
Yes. Actually, there were several times. Usually, what comes to my mind when you said that was with music a lot, because in the Boston area, there are so many musicians. There are a lot of Sai students, and there are also Sai friends and many people who are musically talented and involved with music a lot. And at many times I felt that, you know, I wanted to sing for Swami, I wanted to play harmonium or be part of the music program. And somehow or the other it wouldn't work out. Somehow or the other people would put me down. People would say, no, you cannot do this. You're still a kid. And I understood that I was still a kid, but there was that drive inside of me that even I couldn't even stop. So people would put me down. They would say, no, don't play a harmonium, don't sing, don't play tabla. Or when I actually did get the opportunity by Swami's grace, I would play tabla. People would comment on it. People would say, you can play like this next time or sing like this next time. Or indirectly, they would say, you didn't really sing well. You didn't really play well. And being a kid, I actually never knew how to react to that, respond to that. I would get very upset because I was thinking, okay, I'm singing for Swami, I'm playing for Swami, and I also want to satisfy myself, the Swami inside of me. So why are these people coming around and criticizing me? My parents would say, don't listen to them. Don't sing for the people around. Don't play for the people around. Only play for Swami. But I understood that and I accepted that. But at the same time, it was like constantly people would give their criticism, people would give their comments, and I never knew how to react or respond to it. And I would always feel put down. My friends were progressing in their music. They were singing, they were getting the opportunity to sing. I felt I was a little bit jealous, you know, a little bit selfish. I want to sing as well. Why can't I sing for Swami? That still continues to today. Still have to learn how to deal with that. But yeah, there were many times where I felt left out, I felt let down, saying that, why can't I be a part of this? Why can't I be a part of this other program?
And how did your learning from SSC help you with it, if at all?
So SSC told me that, SSC taught me that I have to have self-confidence and feel good about myself, that there's nothing wrong in having some self-satisfaction, some self-love. During SSC classes or when I was spending time with the young adults there in their own satsangs, many like Swami's quotes or discourses about unconditional love that really touched me, saying that it's okay to have some self-love. It's okay to be like, I did a good job, I did well, because then you feel content for yourself, feel confident for yourself. So when all these other criticisms and all these other people bring their own opinions and their own thoughts to your life and to your music, I would know how to respond to it, because I can say that, okay, I'll take your criticism. I'm not taking it to heart. I will take it as, yes, I will perform. I will sing better next time. But I also feel content for myself. I also feel satisfied that I did a good job. I think Swami enjoyed what I offered to him today. I sung well. And next time, I will sing better, because there's always room for improvement. Mm-hmm. That's what SSE taught me, that if you have self-confidence, if you have the motivation and satisfaction within you, and you have that love, then what other people say wouldn't really matter. It wouldn't really affect you personally.
Adirath, you feel so strongly and passionately about Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, and yet in your entire young life of 17 years, you have had only one physical contact or interaction with him, and you've been in the divine presence once.
Yeah.
When you had the opportunity to offer a rose to Bhagwan as part of the US tour.
Yes.
What can you share with us about that moment, that special memory etched forever?
So, yes, in 2008, our U.S. group came, and I tagged along with them because it was my first time at Puttaparthi, and I was extremely excited because it was not only that, oh my God, I'm going to see Swami for the first time physically rather than seeing him in videos and listening to him, it's also that I'm with my friends and I'm going to enjoy with them. So we were practicing, we were getting ready for the program, and one day they were like, the U.S. group is going to give a musical offering to Swami. So we were all very excited. So that day we were all sitting down. The kids were sitting in the back. The adults were sitting in the front. And out of nowhere, someone offers me a rose. So I thought, okay, oh, we're all going to get roses.
You thought it was for you?
I was like, okay, we're all going to get roses. Huh? So why don't I keep it? And they're like, no, 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 go up. So Srikant Vaidyanathan, he's a Sai student, he's an alumni. He was there with the group as well. So he said, come up, come up. And Swami's sitting right there. So I was like, everything was happening so fast. It was all like a blur to me, everyone around. And I'm just looking and I'm walking up. And when I went there, Swami was talking to Srikant uncle. He was conversing, saying, Chala Rojalendi Ninnu Chusi, it's been so long since I've seen you. And he said, yes, we're going to musical offering. He said, here's a young boy, he offer flower. I was actually very terrified to see Swami because, you know, from afar, it's like, oh, Swami, so much love, so compassion. But right there, looking up, I was like, I couldn't lift my head up. So I was just looking down at his feet, looking down at the flower. Eventually, somehow I managed to look up, and all I saw was just a smile. And he said, Bhavandi, I gave the flower. He said, good. I gave the flower. Can I take Father Namaskar? I took Father Namaskar and I went and sat down. And that was the physical interaction I had with him. And then the music program went amazingly well. And it was set in stone. It was perfect for me. And honestly, I had no time to think about what happened. It all just happened spur of the moment.
Mm. And I understand that that was a turning point in your life. After that, you were suggesting to me in an earlier conversation that everything has been almost picture perfect. Everything is flowing so well in your life.
Yeah, it was just amazing, because right after that, you know, the group got together and at the North area, and we were just talking. Everyone was going to leave. Program was great. And out of the blue, I never was introduced to Vedam, never introduced to tabla. I learned harmonium for a while, and I was learning how to sing because my parents put me in music class. But tabla, how to sing devotional songs, classical, and Vedam especially, like, never had any introduction to it. It was all very new to me. And we were sitting there, and I was talking to my friends, and out of the blue, a Vedic line just comes out of nowhere. And
From your mouth?
Yeah, from my mouth. It's actually from Mantra Pushpam. Same kaman kama kama mahyam. That one line comes up. I have never heard Vedam in my life till I came to Puttaparthi. Never learned Vedam. And at that moment, I was like, what is this? It kind of sounded a little funny to me. And I made fun of it. I was like, this is very funny. But when I went back to the U.S., I told my dad, this is the one thing that I just said out of the blue, And my dad said, oh, this is Vedam. And then my dad said, let's learn. And then immediately, one after the other, Vedic chants and suktams and all would just come to me easily. I wouldn't have to put any effort.
Where do you think they were coming from?
I honestly have no clue. It's all Swami that I wouldn't even struggle to pronounce the words and...
It just flowed.
It would just flow. Maybe memorizing was a little tassel to memorize the longer Vedic chants, but to learn it, my dad would listen and then my dad would tell me. And sometimes my dad would also make a mistake. I'd say, Dad, no, that's not right. This is how you say it. And I would correct my own dad.
So now you have learned Vedam?
Yes, I've learned my dad. Wonderful opportunity. My dad never would have thought this would happen, but my dad also learned. And my dad and I enjoy, we learned together. He'll listen the chantings from morning and evening, satsang here in Puttaparthi. And then my dad would listen saying, let's learn this. And then he will learn it and then he would teach me.
So nice, that's bonding Vedam for you.
Yeah, so that's how Vedam just, it just entered into my life. And just like that, also tabla. I never knew I would play tabla. There were so many tabla players there, and I would just sit and watch them. Honestly, actually, when I was a kid, I actually didn't like tabla. I didn't want to play tabla. I only wanted to sing. But then I was around 12 or 13 years of age, when my voice was going through that cracking phase, I couldn't really sing bhajans. I would watch, oh, they're playing tabla like this, this is what they play. And at home, I would try playing myself. I never learned classical tabla, never went to a guru. I would just listen to the Prashanti tabla players or the tabla players around in the Boston area, and I would try to copy them. And then my dad and a few others noticed that, saying that, why don't we put him in tabla class? And so naturally, that would just come to me. It's all Swami's grace that people would say, wow, you sing like this, you play tabla like this, I'm like Sairam. They think I practice for hours and hours. And I said, I honestly don't practice for those many hours. It's all Swami, literally after 2008, it's all Swami's grace that I can just listen to someone play or someone sing and I can immediately recreate.
So this manifestation of perhaps some inherent skills and talents that has happened, that the Vedam just came out. We do not know if it's a past life hangover or it's just Swami's grace that he planted it there and started pouring out.
Yes.
This Vedam chanting, this tabla playing, these skills, these talents, how have they impacted you as a person?
Well, whenever I felt like there was so much stress in school or maybe I had an argument with my friend, you know, music was something that I would go to, because in that time I would spend with music, listening to bhajans and playing tabla along with the bhajans, or taking my harmonium and singing, or when my dad and I would chant Vedam, I would forget everything. In that hour or even 5-10 minutes that I would spend with the music, I would forget everything and I would be in this completely different world, and I would be engrossed saying that, wow, why can't I live in this world on a constant basis? Because the moment I would exit out of that world, the moment I would conclude my prayers or the music practice is over, all these worldly issues and all these problems and the argument maybe I had with my friend a couple hours ago would just come back to me. And I would be shocked saying that I just had such an amazing time singing or practicing. How did all of this come back again? So music was kind of like a scapegoat for me. I could go and paint my own picture on this blank canvas. And every time I would go, I could paint a new picture. And a new drawing would come out, new form of art would come out. And so that was the best for me. So every time if I'm feeling down something, even listening to a song, it would keep me in this stable state. So then right after that, I can actually contemplate and think that, okay, why did this happen? So then I have the power and the mental capability to think of, okay, why did I argue with my friend? Or why am I taking so much stress when I actually don't need to take so much stress? So that was the biggest thing for me with music. Just that not only did I enjoy it, but it was another way for me to calm myself down and think about and not overthink all these worldly aspects and issues.
That's very nice to hear. And I think that's quite a lesson for everybody that, you know, music offers you that window, that clarity, first to calm down and then to revisit and see things with more calmness. Now, you're headed to the University of Toronto in Canada to pursue your undergraduate studies in science.
Yes.
What I want to ask you, Adhiraj, is that the Sri Satya Sai International Organization, the Sai community, your gurus, your parents, your Balvikas teachers, everybody in SSC have invested a lot of love, care and concern into nurturing you. And of course, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba personally also, when he blessed you and said Bagundi, when he gave you the opportunity to offer the rose. All these people are invested in your life, in your nurturing, in your raising, because it takes a lot of positive input to raise a good young adult.
Mm-hmm.
How will you remember this love, and how will this love play itself out in the adult person you hope to grow into?
Remembering my teachers and remembering those that have played such a major role in my life isn't something that I would plan. You know, I wouldn't think that this person did this one time, this person did this other time. It would just come naturally from me.
Mm-hmm.
When I get the opportunity to play for a renowned artist that would just show up in the area, or when I get the opportunity to sing, or I help someone with whatever issues they're having, naturally from within me, there's this thanking, this gratefulness for all the teachers and all the people that would go out of their way to make sure that I'm happy and that I'm learning and that I'm growing into this person, a good person in society. So I would never like create a checklist saying that this person did this, this person did this, this person did this, because then I feel like it becomes so quantified on how much I have to thank these people.
Mm-hmm.
Even my parents, I cannot quantify how much I can thank them, where they would, if I wanted something, I want to jam with my friends with music, because they're all in this area, and they would be so tired and so exhausted, yet they would still drive me an hour to this place, wait, and late at night after it's all done, we would go back home. The amount of gratefulness, the amount of love that all these people have showed me is something I cannot quantify. So when I get these opportunities and when these situations rise up and I get so many amazing opportunities, in the back of my mind, not only am I thanking Swami for blessing me, but I also keep in mind to thank all of these people, and when I get the opportunity to see them, I will definitely thank them. But in the back of my mind, I'm always naturally from within just saying thank you for this community that I can always go back to, and this family that I can always fit in with and be with.
Now, when you start the university studies, your education at the University of Toronto, you're on your own. You will be a resident at the university, I'm guessing, on the campus.
Yes.
Now, that gives a lot of young adults look so forward to it, because it confers this total freedom to make the choices you want, you know, whether you want to brush your teeth or take a shower is entirely up to you. And there's also a very active social life on every university campus.
Mm-hmm.
Being who you are today, how do you intend to deal with that kind of all those very many temptations?
Mm-hmm. So I'm a bit, I've come to find out from my friends and from my parents and just listening to myself sometimes when I talk, I'm a very open person. For me, it's like if I say something, if I'm acting a certain way, I cannot act a different way. I cannot say something else and be someone else inside, because I feel like I'm lying to myself then. And that's something that I cannot deal with. So whatever that I feel, whatever I want to say, would genuinely just come out of me. So I'm like this one person. I'm not sometimes this person or that person. Sometimes that could be a problematic situation in social settings. But once again, you come to learn how to deal with that. But yes, in a university setting, there will be a lot of temptations and a lot of social gatherings. And knowing me, I will attend these social gatherings and I will try to make friends and try to bond with people and be my best to be the person that I am, just not change who I am. But if any sort of temptation that I feel is not something I believe in, and also not something that is something that would affect me either physically or mentally or in any sort of way in my life, what I have is I know that the people who have brought me up and the SSC that I've attended for such a long time has given me the power to make my own decisions. I wouldn't be comfortable going off to Toronto, living independently with my parents so far away and no one else that I know around. It's a new life. I wouldn't feel comfortable if I knew that to a certain extent, SSC has given me confidence to make the right decision and to see that, okay, this party is something I don't want to go to. So I'm not going to go to it because none of my friends are going. Plus, I don't know who's going to be there. So being exposed...
But if all your friends are going to a party that you feel offering temptations which go beyond the boundaries that you want to live your life within, mm-hmm. what are you going to do? And everybody says, come on, man, we're all mm-hmm. there. Why don't you join us?
Yeah.
Don't be such a bore. Yeah. You know, let's have some cool fun together.
Well, if I'm going to say no. And if they say that, oh, wow, and they you know, make fun of me. Wow, why you didn't say no? And later on, they talk about, wow, that party was so much fun, and I feel left out because I wasn't there. No, that's okay to me. Because if these people are my close friends, if they're my true friends, then, you know, they would understand that if I'm not pressuring you to do something that you don't feel comfortable doing, then the same goes the opposite way where I don't want to come to this party for whatever reason that exists. So you would understand that, okay, he doesn't want to come, that's fine. I can tell him about how it was before, but if he doesn't want to come, I don't need to make fun of it or joke around about it. And also if I feel like, okay, I don't know how to deal with this particular situation, I know that I could call my friend or I could call my parents or call any Psy adult that there is and ask them for advice because me being open allows them to be open with me as well. So I get a genuine response and I would know what to do with that situation. So if I'm doubting my own actions, I know that I could call any one of my friends or message any one of the Psy family and get a response back.
Well, you're very blessed to have that support system, and I think you have to thank only Bhagwan for that, for creating that. Now, at the time of this interview on August 5th, 2016, Bhagwan is no longer in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it that still draws you to Prashanthi Nilayam?
The music.
The music?
The music really draws me in because I kind of found it hard to see Swami in a photo, you know, to see Swami in an idol, to see Swami at an altar setting. Because to me, it felt like I was putting faith in an external being. Yeah, Swami in the physical form was beautiful. It was amazing. There are no words to describe having Swami in the physical form versus in this abstract form. But now that Swami is not in the physical form and me not really enjoying and not feeling comfortable actually, putting faith in, let's say, the chair that they put there or the pictures that they put there, I more so look to feel, to have that faith and to believe in the Swami that's inside of me. Because correlating with that, it would help me develop myself and bring my own self-satisfaction. So when I'm singing, is the Swami inside of me content? Is he happy? And if that's there, that's all that I need. So why do I keep coming back to Parthi? The music just draws me as well. When I'm sitting there in the hall, when I'm listening to the Prashanthi boy singing, when I listen to the music, I feel so overwhelmed, so happy, and so, like, I won't show it in my face, but I'll just be sitting there, giving chorus, enjoying the moment, enjoying that 1 hour of bhajan, that 1 hour of Vedam, that joy that comes within me, because I know that Swami is enjoying it. And if Swami is enjoying it, I'm also enjoying it at the same time.
Wonderful. Well, on that very joyful note, Adhirath, I thank you so very much for joining us on Radio Sai and sharing your perspective with our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me. I thank Swami and all of you for giving me this wonderful opportunity to speak.
And I also want to wish you the best of luck as you pursue your studies. You start your university education in Toronto from all of us at Team Radio Sai.
Thank you so much.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai.
side.